show, everybody. It's Cairo Nights. Mason Mike hanging out with you on this Wednesday. It's a Soft Rock Wednesday. As the world is unpredictable day to day, one thing will be around forever and ever.
Which
I'm
is
calling
what?
It, and that's Soft Rock Wednesday.
Oh, good.
It's the most even consistent thing in my life.
Even when David leaves.
I know. We're going to lose DB at the end of this week, and I'm shedding tears about it. But Soft Rock Wednesday will prevail.
I hope Funky Friday will, too.
I do, too. I love Funky
nice
Friday.
Touch.
Did we ever get a Motown Monday in?
No, Monday just seemed
it was
a little tough.
It was a little tough.
Yeah.
Monday was a little tough.
Yeah.
Mike Lewis out tonight.
Oh.
Yeah, he took the day off.
So who's
and,
in?
Well, let me tell you, Frank. He is the one and only. World famous
Captain
Jack Stein. Jack. What's up, Jack?
Not but I love the intros.
Do you?
I love them so much.
We gotta do a little showmanship here, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Jack joining us live and remote from Santa Cruz.
Our own Johnny Depp.
California. If you want to keep up on what Jack is doing, by the way, he's got a, can I say, phenomenal YouTube channel. I've seen a couple of his videos, and they are, I was floored. Impressed.
Really?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much.
Seems like a lot of time and effort and skill goes into these things. You can check out Jack's YouTube channel, Human Genius.
Human genius.
Look up human genius.
Try to be
YouTube.
As modest as possible.
I was humble
these
genius.
Kinds of things.
That's the Jack
humble.
Stein way. Glad that you're here with us, Jack. Always enjoy talking to you. It's definitely going to be an interesting night tonight, for sure. As it has been, I don't know, for the last
week,
decade.
Month.
It seems. I know. I've lost track of all time.
Quarter.
How you doing, Jack?
I'm doing well. I've been following these protests that have been going on up in Seattle, and I got to tell you, the Seattle Police Department really bringing out the big guns.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of pictures of guys looking like they're from Star Wars or something like that.
Yeah.
Really looking almost, dare I say, excessive in their force when it comes to breaking up crowds.
Yeah, well, we will definitely get into it. The situation in Santa Cruz is a little bit different, I'm assuming.
Yeah, no, the Whole Foods are still open and everybody's peaceful and everyone's having it. We did make national news. I don't know if you guys saw this, but our chief of police, Andy Mills, took a knee with the mayor of Santa Cruz, the first black mayor of Santa Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
And they took a knee together in solidarity, and it was a wonderful photo opportunity. And CNN picked it up for about 30 seconds, and then we all went to being back into obscurity.
Yeah.
That's
about you had your 15 minutes. Proud of you.
We did, yeah.
Proud of you. Okay, everybody, let's get to the news.
Here's the top three things we need to discuss. Number one.
So protests across the nation continued today as major cities have instituted curfews each night. CBS Evening News' Nora O'Donnell details arrests across the country.
Tonight, CBS News is reporting that there have been more than 13,500 arrests in 43 cities, all related to protests. Los Angeles, Dallas, and Washington, D.C. saw spikes in arrests Monday night as police enforced curfews.
Now, protesters did have something to celebrate today as Minnesota's attorney general announced charges against all four Minneapolis police officers responsible for the murder of George Floyd. Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison made this announcement earlier today.
Today, I filed an amended complaint that charges former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin with murder in the second degree for the death of George Floyd.
Now, that's second degree up from third degree, which was the original charge. Now, as for the remaining three officers involved in the death of Floyd, CBS News' Skylar Henry has more.
The crowd let out a cheer.
Hearing that former police officer Derek Chauvin is now facing second-degree murder charges in the death of George Floyd. The three other officers involved in Floyd's arrest are also now charged. The news came just hours after Floyd's son arrived at the spot where his 46-year-old father died and knelt in prayer.
All four officers are now being held in custody with $1 million bail for each. However, for many demonstrators around the country, the charges themselves are not quite enough. CBS's Chris Van Cleve spoke to protesters in several cities to ask about the new developments. And one Minneapolis protester, Chris Muckle, claimed that in order for there to be real celebration, the four officers need to be convicted of their crimes.
Cops have been charged in the past and not convicted, so as much as it is a step in the right direction, it's not a satisfaction that we will settle with.
Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, some demonstrators are taking any victories they can.
They should have been arrested right away, but better late than never.
And in the nation's capital, the struggle continues.
We're still not done here. There's still things that need to be done.
D.C. protester Nandy Taylor told CBS that they will not stop until there is real justice for black lives.
We are not giving up. We are not going anywhere. We will show up every day until black lives matter.
In Atlanta, six police officers are facing charges for excessive force on protesters during demonstrations on Saturday night. The six officers were filmed in downtown Atlanta breaking windows of a vehicle, yanking a woman out of the car, and tasing a man. CNN spoke to the two college students who were assaulted. Messiah Young had trouble describing how it felt being tased in the back by officers.
It's probably one of the hardest moments that I've had to face in my life. I can't even fathom what happened. At this point, I'm just so far gone. It's like I'm trying to remove myself from that situation, but it's really hard to cope with.
The woman that police yanked out of the car, Tanya Pilgrim, believed that this might have been her last moments alive.
When they're coming up to the car, I'm just thinking, like, what could we have done? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what could we have done to cause this? And when I think in my mind, when I realize we haven't done anything, you know what I mean? Like, nothing really warranted this.
Scary. As protesters continue to rally across the country, memorial services will be held over the next 6 days, beginning in Minneapolis and spreading throughout Texas and North Carolina, honoring the death of George Floyd. What say you, Jack?
The second degree murder charge upgrade, I know that it sounds really good to a lot of people. A lot of people agree with that. Problem with that is it's a risky move by the prosecutor because they have to prove intent.
Mm-hmm.
They have to prove either A, that at a certain point in time, Derek Chauvin decided that he was going to kill George Floyd, or B, that at a certain point in time he knew that George Floyd had died or was going to die and decided to continue with the knee on the neck.
Right.
It's a risky, risky move, and I'm not sure if it's going to pay off unless they're going to try to have him plead down to a lesser charge, which no one wants, I think.
Yeah, no.
I don't think anybody would be happy with that.
No, I wouldn't think so. I would guess that there's enough video evidence. I mean, the whole thing is on video just about. And I know that first degree you have to show that's premeditated murder.
Yeah.
But I think there is a reasonable point. This is my opinion, that at some point there is it's reasonable to assume that he stopped moving. I mean, he wasn't a threat, and this guy was, Chauvin was still holding him down on his neck. He was talking when he could talk constantly about how I can't breathe, I'm gonna die, you're gonna kill me. And so I don't
know.
I think it's you bring up a good point. It is a more difficult charge to prove, but I think it's totally feasible.
Do you think that gets do you think that he gets a fair shake in a trial given the media attention that, I mean, you can't say George Floyd without saying Derek Chauvin.
Sure.
So at what point in time will he be given a fair trial in these fine United States?
Well, I think that's not a new concern, right? Any high profile case has to deal with that. So I can only assume that the prosecutors and the defense, when they go through, if it's a jury trial or whatever it may be, that they go through and they do jury selection, and it's very deliberate, and they'll get to a place where, you know, you can't not know about what happened. I doubt that there are people who haven't seen the video. I don't know if you would want someone who is out of the loop so much that they have no idea about this story at all involved with a jury trial, but it remains to be seen. I do have faith in the criminal justice system. I mean, it's maybe not as strong as I would like it to be, but I do think our institutions can handle it. And this is an especially, I don't know, sensitive case, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number two.
So here in Seattle, we're entering day six of protests, with demonstrations last night remaining pretty peaceful there. Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott has some more from Governor Jay Inslee.
Governor Inslee pleased to see both protest organizers keeping things peaceful and a decline in bad actors disrupting the message with destruction and violence. The important thing for everyone else, he says, is to listen.
If we're going to succeed coming out of these challenges that we face today, precipitated by this police violence, it has got to encourage us to be all-encompassing to deal with the centuries of racial inequality in our state.
To that end,
I'll be meeting some of the leaders of the peaceful protest movement today. I'll be talking to representatives from Not This Time, from the Black Lives Matter of Seattle King County, and from the Urban League.
Inslee declining to weigh in on whether tactics used by police like tear gas were acceptable, saying those decisions were up to law enforcement, but that any tools used should always be those with the least amount of risk to public safety.
Leaders of the protesting group met with Mayor Jenny Durkin and Seattle Police Chief Carmen Best this afternoon to discuss demands for police reform. Protester Nikita Oliver argued that the police force has been given resources that they are using to injure peaceful activists.
Seattle Police Department is unleashing flashbangs, mace, tear gas. They have very large sticks. They're wearing riot gear.
Oliver made the comparison to 2013 when Black Lives Matter activists last took to the streets.
To be frank, this is no different than what I experienced in 2013. In fact, it feels like it's worse.
Seattle City Councilmember Shama Sawant is joining the NAACP and activists to attempt to change the tactics that Seattle police use. Sawant defended protesters, claiming that any violence inciting riots has been primarily ignited by police.
Video footage since Saturday has repeatedly revealed that the police are the ones instigating the violence, and that, in fact, these seem to be not spontaneous eruptions from the police, but they seem to be coming prepared with instructions to orchestrate violence.
Sawant demanded fundamental change to the way the government uses police forces.
We are done listening to the speeches of establishment politicians and watching them shed crocodile tears while at the same time enabling a militarized police to brutally repress community protests.
She even grilled Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkin.
The mayor of our city stood before protesters and lectured them to find, quote unquote, love and humanity. Then she went on immediately before the TV cameras to staunchly defend the brutal, inhumane actions of Seattle police over the last several days.
And we're going to keep you updated here as to how Seattle's current protests are proceeding throughout the night as most demonstrators are gathered up on Capitol Hill. Down in Olympia, by the way, protesters are gathered tonight for the fifth time outside of the Washington State Capitol building. Now, Jack, you said you've been keeping track of what's been happening up here, I assume, on social media, watching videos and seeing the footage.
Yeah.
What have you seen? What's your takeaway?
It seems so when you begin to militarize a police force in a major metropolitan area, this is going to be the result because they're no longer policing. They are militarizing, right? They are trying to actively quash what could only be described as insurrectionists, right? These horrible people are coming through and they're trying to destroy our fine city. So as far as it looks bad, and actually Councilmember Lisa Herbold said, I've never in 25 years of participating in protests experienced such an indiscriminate use of tear gas and pepper spray and flash bombs against people who are not doing anything wrong with so little effort to de-escalate, negotiate with protesters, utilize peacekeepers, so on and so forth. But I think that's exactly right. They're not there to police at that point anymore. They're there to crush. And so when you have that in a major city like Seattle, it looks bad. It looks like a military force.
Yeah.
Number three.
So curfews. Curfews are taking place all around the United States as city and state officials attempt to mitigate peaceful protests and prevent them from becoming riots. And here are some notable city curfews as of now. New York City is 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. until June 8th. In D.C., it's 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. Throughout L.A. County, it varies from 1 p.m. to 6 a.m. Until at least tomorrow. Chicago's 9 to 6. Atlanta is 8 to sunrise. And here in Seattle, it's a 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew until June 6th. I'm gonna talk out loud, Jack. I don't understand something, right? A lot of people come on the air and they have their opinions and they have their takes, and I really don't understand what is the point of the curfew other than it feels to me like some kind of a workaround. Like they're saying, you can protest, you can exercise your First Amendment rights, even if it's peaceful. But then at a certain time, that curfew kicks in, and then now that legal thing you're doing is suddenly illegal. Does that make sense?
It does. And it I don't know if you remember, but back in 2012 for the Democratic National Convention, they actually had a zone set up. It was very dystopian.
Right.
They had a zone
set up. The free speech zone.
Free speech zone. And people were very critical of it, and rightfully so, as I think people should be critical of a quote-unquote curfew, which is only meant to punish people who have nothing to do with the protests, right? It's meant to punish people. Don't go outside. It's so scary out there that you're not allowed to go outside. I think it's going to backfire. I think it's going to actually, people are going to respond to that poorly, as they did in New York City and as they did in Los Angeles, particularly in Venice Beach. I mean, people just said, I'm going to be going outside. 4 o'clock curfew?
Right.
I'm not four, you know?
Yeah, a lot of this has to do with, and we're going to talk about this kind of thing a lot, with being heard, right? It's the fact that you've got a lot of people, a lot of Americans, specifically African Americans, but there's this protest. Everybody's there, right? All shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, all that. But you've got a group of people who, for decades and decades and centuries, you could argue, has been trying to speak up, has been trying to have their voice heard, and they haven't. It's been squashed. And so to respond to a protest that is about police brutality and trying to get that message out by saying, you can't talk after this time, we don't want to hear from you, and the police using the force that they're using in a protest that's about police brutality and excessive force, I just genuinely don't understand it. Doesn't make sense.
I mean, it's the nature of policing, though. You know, I think that's one of the things that maybe people, I don't know if they forget, or maybe we're just so used to having the squad car at the end of the street that's what they are there for. They are there to quash.
Right.
So, I mean, it shouldn't be a surprise when they come in with their riot gear and tell everybody to go home at 6 p.m.
Right. And why the riot? I don't understand. I mean, when your mere presence is an escalation, like, that's an issue. And we need to talk about that kind of stuff. But it just, I don't hear enough conversation about it. That's all I'm going to say. Coming up on the show, everybody, Jack Stein, all night long. It's going to be a good time. Yeah, DB. coming up next, Rachel Bell. She's going to come in and talk about one of the gatherings that happened earlier today was about a call to defund the Seattle Police Department. What does that mean? Rachel Bell is going to come in next. She's going to explain. Stay tuned. Kyra Nights. Happy Soft Rock Wednesday, Rachel Bell.
It's my favorite holiday. You know what I hate? Hanukkah, Thanksgiving, Easter, my birthday, 4th of July, Arbor Day.
All garbage.
Worst holidays. This is my holiday.
Soft Rock Wednesday.
And it comes once a week. So great.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Here we go.
I've been on the air here a long time, but this last stint has been almost 10 years. And I think when people think Rachel Bell, they think hard news. They think journalism. They think hard reporting. So that's what I'm going to give the people today. I used to be this kind of reporter, and I've skipped off into, you know, feature reporting, which is something that I enjoy. But today I went down the hard news kind of rabbit hole. And I just want to be transparent that, you know, I am learning a lot this week, and I'm learning a lot about myself, and I'm trying to educate myself. And I've actually changed my mind and my opinion about a couple of things. And I felt very uncomfortable and had to realize that that's what the feeling was, because I had to admit that I was wrong the first time. And so I want to say, going into this story, that this concept is new to me, and I learned about it today. So you could learn about it with me if you didn't know already, which is the concept of defunding a police department.
Let me just say, I really like what you just said, and that you said it, that a lot of the stuff that's happening right now, especially from us on air here at Cairo, because we're all white, just about.
Yes.
Is talking things through, is trying to figure this out, is listening and sort of processing with each other. So I'm looking forward to doing this with you, because like you, this was an idea that I was just like, well, no. You can't. No, never. and I've started to maybe not hold that firm a thought on it.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, that's why I want to admit what I don't know, because I think, like you said, we are, I don't know, what, 95% white, if not more, mm-hmm. on the air, and I want to put more black voices on. I don't want to act like we know everything, which is kind of a theme in talk radio, is yep. like you come and you have opinions and everything is black and white.
Right.
And not everything isn't black and white. I mean, no pun intended or right. pun words intended. Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, coming here to say that, you know, we're not experts on everything, but we're just going to tell you the information that we found out. So today there was yet another rally in Capitol Hill at 1:30. But unlike the ones that have been happening since Friday, since Saturday, this one featured speakers that are well-known social justice advocates in Seattle, people that we hadn't heard from yet. And this rally was more organized and had a purpose as far as like a very direct topic that they wanted to talk about, which is defunding and demilitarizing the Seattle Police Department. So here is Nikita Oliver. She is a community organizer and an attorney. She ran for Seattle mayor in 2017, and she spoke to the Seattle City Council over Zoom this morning.
One of the major demands of our movement right now is to defund and demilitarize the police. Seattle Police Department is unleashing flashbangs, mace, tear gas. They're running into protesters with their bikes. They have very large sticks. They're wearing riot gear. And so the only option is to begin to defund and demilitarize. We call for right now a 50% defund of the Seattle Police Department. And we demand that those dollars be invested in community-based alternatives to incarceration, community-based alternatives for public safety.
So over the past 48 hours, 17,000 people signed a petition urging the city to cut the police budget in half. And at the end of the rally, they delivered that petition. So what they want to do with that money, they say it would be better spent on things like affordable housing, community-based anti-violence programs, universal child care, free public transit, mental health services, things that sound different. But they're saying, hey, these are social problems that are better solved in this way than by trying to solve them with the police, which hasn't been successful.
We know that when people are affected economically, when there is mass poverty in a community, it only promotes more struggle, more pain, and the criminalizing of the things that we have to do to survive.
So I wanted to understand what defunding really meant and how that would actually happen. You know what the process is? So I spoke with Dr. Jacqueline Helfgott. She's a professor and director of the Crime and Justice Research Center at Seattle University's Department of Criminal Justice. And I was looking for facts from her, but she came in with a very strong opinion that was the exact opposite of Nikita Oliver's.
No, we don't need to defund the police. We need to stop blaming the police for all of the problems that we have in society.
She argues that money already has been diverted to social programs from the police, and that work is being done to reform police departments.
Nothing that's been implemented is changing the fact that George Floyd was murdered by police. Nothing in any of the police reforms that we've been doing has changed the fact that person after person after person of color has to feel like they can't trust the police. However, an enormous amount of work has gone into creating change in policing systems in the United States. Is it perfect? No. Is it widespread? No. Yes, we're making gains. We're nowhere near where we need to go. But if we throw it all out now, we're never going to get there.
She says every year they do a Seattle public safety survey, and they ask Seattleites what their concerns are about crime and public safety.
Every single year, people in Seattle are saying that we have a lack of police capacity. People are identifying that we have issues across the city. But one of those issues is that we need more resources going into police and public safety, not less. So we actually have data. People want to see more police on the street.
So what I've taken from this, just my opinion, is that I don't know why these two have to be in the same category. I don't know what life would be like in Seattle if we had fewer police officers. I know that I have friends who work in bars where they've tried to call the police because they felt threatened and it took hours for the police
right,
to come because
sure.
they were so busy.
Yeah.
But I know that our society needs those social issues fixed. I mean, I think that's at the base of this. It's like school shootings. It comes from mental health issues. You know, homelessness comes from mental health. And I think the argument they're making is that if we had a healthier society, we wouldn't need as many police officers because there would be less crime if there was better, you know, more equality and people had more money, frankly. But I don't know how those two kind of go back and forth.
The police department back in the day, you had a neighborhood station and they would walk the beat and get to know people in the neighborhood. And because they were familiar with everyone in their neighborhood, you'd know, like, oh, that's Greg. He's just kind of crazy. He's harmless, but he's crazy. That's Greg, right? And you had interaction with your community. But now these smaller places are getting shut down in favor of a more consolidated police department, a more militarized police department. And so the interaction between the police and the public are very, very different from what it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
I think.
And that's how a man gets killed for trying to use a $20 counterfeit bill.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that the police department's track record of social issues isn't great. And I think there are plenty of places or at least opportunities. Maybe it's a nonprofit that you can funnel that money into that's doing things like, let's say there's something going on, somebody's emotionally disturbed or whatever it is. Instead of just calling the cops, instead of calling 911, maybe there's a different number you can, maybe it's a 211 or a 311 that can put you in touch with a service that isn't necessarily law enforcement, but is trained to handle and de-escalate and deal with that situation. I mean, that to me is both a new idea this week, basically.
Yeah, that's what they're asking for.
And something that I don't at this point necessarily disagree with.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think every situation needs the police, but that's the only number that we have to call.
Right.
And yeah, I think you're right. I think the police escalate situations, even if they don't escalate it, because you're afraid, oh my God, the police, I'm going to get in trouble.
Right.
And if it was just like a couple of moderators, like social workers who were trained exactly in that problem, like you're saying,
right,
you know, maybe it would be calmed down. And, you know, there's a lot of jobs that require you to have a certain personality, like a bedside manner, you know, like everyone's had a bad teacher or a bad doctor who just did not. And the same is true for cops. Like there's a certain personality. And if you don't have it, just because, you know, you pass the test and you have good mental health and you do everything right, I don't know what you do in police training, every single thing, doesn't mean you should be a cop. And I think that they should take those kind of things into consideration. There needs to be a way to check annually for anger management. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have an anger management problem, you should not be a cop. And you need to have that bedside manner to de-escalate situations and to be able to judge character. So, I mean, this is complicated.
Very.
I don't think they're going to get 50% of the police defunded, but who knows what they could get out of having these conversations. And I don't think what Dr. Helfgott said is right, to say, we've been working so hard for so many years, it's not working, but it might work eventually. It's
right.
Like, no, call it off and try something new.
Try something new.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you.
We'll be back. More Cairo Nights after this. I got to sing on Soft Rock Wednesdays. And I love the falsetto. That's my new move. I'm going to be famous for it. Speaking of famous.
Good. I mean, it's real good, that falsetto. That is like, still, you know, I have a fine falsetto, but my palate's a little bit too high for the falsetto, so it just nasally.
Yeah, that's right. You have to bounce it off the back of the roof of your mouth. That's how singing. Breathe from the diaphragm. That's the world famous Jack Stein filling in for Mike Lewis tonight down in Santa Cruz, California. Jack, I want to tell you about this kid, and I call him a kid because he genuinely is, but he's a high school student.
Yeah.
He's from Mercer Island, which is just over the water here from Seattle. And his name is Avi Schiffman. And Avi was in the news, a month or so ago, maybe 2 months ago. Who knows what time it is anymore. But he created a website. It's called ncove2019.live. And it is a COVID-19 resource website. It is the best one I've ever seen. This kid, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I'm going to call him a kid because it really emphasizes my point here. Like Whitney said, the children are the future. He put together a database of just everything that was going on with coronavirus all around the world, broke it down, how many people were getting sick, how many people were dying, how many people were recovering. It broke it down state by state here in the U.S. It was just updated constantly. It was a really, really fantastic resource. This kid is brilliant, and Avi's gone and done it again, because he has built, in response to all of the stuff that's happening right now, all the protests, 2020protests.com. 2020protests.com. And it is basically, according to GeekWire, a clickable list of every U.S. state plus Washington, D.C. And each link provides the following. Details about protest locations, cities where the National Guard has been deployed, curfew times, some social media addresses, resources for donating to causes like the official George Floyd Memorial Fund, black-owned businesses, bail funds, various petitions. It's got information on how to protest safely, what to wear, you know, for protection and stuff like that. And I am in awe of this kid. If he doesn't have job offers lined up to the moon at this point, I don't know what else is wrong with the world.
I believe he turn down advertising on the COVID website. I remember reading about that someone actually offered him, you know, the banner ads or something like that, and he said no dice.
Bruh, $1 million. For real. This kid turned down that much money. He says he's got a team on this one now. There's apparently 11 other people, including him. I call him the Dirty Dozen. And when he was asked about, because he's constantly updating, right? And people are sending in, you know, bug reports like, hey, this isn't quite working, that isn't quite working. So he's on this basically 24/7. And someone asked him, like, how do you sleep? Like, what's your sleep schedule? And his answer was the minimum to stay alive. Which sounds like
find this just
a DB situation.
This is a little bit creepy, though, right? That you have a child who is able to aggregate all this information into one place. If it was the government doing it, right. I think that people might say, whoa, you're going to do what? And say how many people are there and what they're doing and where in the curfew is.
I would say, who are you and what did you do with the government? Because there's no way. I haven't seen anything along the lines of what this young man is doing. He's a young man. I got
to
pay him.
I find it to be a little creepy that a young man like that has so much brain power. And that's not a joke. There's something about the kids who are coming up right now, their ability to code and their ability to produce makes me feel like a cave person.
Yes.
I have no idea
what
exactly he's doing. But I applaud him.
Yeah,
slow
well
clap.
Done. That's everybody. That's for Avi. Avi Schiffman. Again, 2020protests.com. If you want to check that out, the 8 o'clock hour of Cairo Nights comes up next. More with your boy Mace and the world famous Jack Stein right after this break. Stay tuned.